Astro Travelers, and welcome to another episode of Tales of Teyvat, a Genshin lore podcast. Last week, we reminisced all about the last 4 years of Lantern Rite, and we're already waiting to find out all about next year's event and the lore they'll give us then.
Never fear. Her Excellency Sangonomiya is here. Welcome to the stage, Divine Priestess Kokomi!
Looking to get corralled into a new coral? Waiting around in the dark for a giant snake god to carry you to your new home? Well, stroke our backs and call us Oribashi, because we're taking you all the way to the surface of our website. That's talesofteyvat.com, where you can see select visuals of all the fun and fishy things that we mention in each episode.
Our site also includes links to our past seasons and special episodes, artist spotlights from the community for every episode, and wallpapers to download.
Finally, feel free to email us at talesofteyvatpod@gmail.com to let us know what you think of this week's episode and what topics you'd like to see in the future. Before we talk about Goro's idol, though, let's check our mail from the Komania Express. This week, our letter is from Rin on Spotify, and their question fits a little too perfectly into our episode, as they wrote, "I have a theory that Kokomi might be a reincarnation of Oribashi, and I'd love to hear your thoughts about it. Or maybe Kokomi lore, or just Sangonomiya lore." So we got the perfect episode for you, Rin.
Yeah, we're going to cover that in detail. You got an hour? We'll answer your question.
We really need like a full 25 hours here for this.
What is your quick hot take, though, on the theory that Kokomi might be a reincarnation of Oribashi?
Yes and no. The reason, yes, we're going to get into why.
I was like, I'm going to tell you both.
I'm going to tell you both. I don't think like full reincarnation, but does she have the reincarnation of the power that Oribashi may have? More than likely. Let's get into it.
I say no, she's not a reincarnation. But I also think it's interesting that one of her descriptions, and I believe it's her official description, and it's also said within her miscellany video when she was ascended as the Divine Priestess, that the meaning behind this is such to inherit the will of a god in a mortal's body and to defend this land and its people in that god's stead. I think that's very interesting, and I can understand where the reincarnation theories come from for that. But I feel like she's not necessarily a full reincarnation, but she's like kissed by the gods, or kissed by a big giant whale, or whatever.
I feel like there's a possible yes, because of the same quote with the meaning is to inherit the will of a god if you're the Divine Priestess, and the god in this case is Oribashi, because that's the god that they worship. So it's like, it'd be super cool if she was, and it's like a smidgen of a possibility, but also it feels that every Divine Priestess before her must have also been the goal to inherit the will of a god that is Oribashi. So unless they're all reincarnations, I don't know if I can go for it completely.
I mean, but who else memorized the art of war?
It's a very busy soul.
All I can think about since Tiff said kissed by the gods is, kiss me underneath what Hatsumi.
I mean, honestly, she needs that.
Tales of Teyvat, the Broadway musical, continues.
I think she made out with Oribashi. And
what?
Everyone is just like, oh.
Is this some more timey-wimey bullshit, Brandon?
Well, listen, if Oribashi can do research in, you know, a lab and read books, they can make out with a person.
Yeah.
No, oh, no, the timeline isn't working for me, but I like it.
But there's a difference between a snake and a dragon.
Well, this is a snake.
But she's a dragon!
Maybe.
Descended of dragons.
I actually think she's just a regular human, but we'll get into it.
Kokomi is not regular. She is wonderful.
I highly disagree, and we will get into why.
Well, Rin, you definitely asked the perfect lead-in question for today. So thanks for your question. Feel free to write into us more, especially after hearing this episode. But now let's actually talk Kokomi. So we've talked a little bit about some interestingness about her, but who is Kokomi on the surface? Kokomi is the Divine Priestess, the general of Watasumi Island. She is another person that has a lot of titles for some reason. I don't know if it's mostly an Inazuma thing or what, but she's also known as the general of Watasumi Island, Your Excellency, depending on who you ask, the Divine Priestess of Watasumi Island, and the Supreme Leader of Watsumi Island. So she's rivaling Ito in gold on this list.
Supreme leader. I immediately saw Kakomi in Star Wars.
She would have the Force.
Supreme leader Snood.
She would look cute with like the Leia buns.
Yeah. Oh my God. So cute. And then like instead of just the buns, there'd be cute little fishies like wrapping it.
They're just sushi rolls. Does that make Goru Han Solo? Does he not want to know the odds?
I mean, never ask for the odds. Then you'll choke.
Choke?
Yeah. I mean,
that's what he wants. Anyway, we are first introduced to Kakomi during the Inazuman Archon line when there's a huge battle happening between the Shogunate and the soldiers of the Resistance, which is, this is Star Wars.
Everything is Star Wars.
The moment you said Resistance. Oh, wait.
Yeah, literally, I was like, oh. But the Resistance and the Shogunate has this huge battle. You can actually still see the remains of this battle out on the islands. I believe it's near Yashiori Island. And the Watsumi's not doing great. And all of a sudden, bubbles start to formulate out of the ground. And Kakomi descends from the air onto us. And then brings Kazuha and Beto with her. And it's great. And that is how we're first introduced to Kakomi.
I love it.
Way to make an entrance.
Doesn't she kind of like twirl as she's coming down?
Yeah.
She fucking, like, if she was not a god, she should have been.
She kind of like descends upon them like the good witch in Wizard of Oz. She's like, yes, I am here in my bubble.
But in a little spiral.
Yeah.
She's kind of like, wee.
Yeah. But I think it's a great introduction into her because the juxtaposition of her sweetness and her cutesiness, even like, and I can only speak for the English voice because I don't listen to it in any other language, but her voice even is so tiny and sweet and cute, but she's like a military mastermind. And I think like seeing kind of that entrance really shows that, like her just being this sweet little angel baby, and it's like, no, I'm gonna put an end to this shit, stop it.
She's like, screw y'all, I'm in charge. She does scare me. There's a lot of like really scary edits of her as she like threatens people, like she threatens Child in some edits, but she's very intimidating. I would not want to be on her bad side.
In like edits that people make?
Yeah, and edits that people do.
They are scary. She is really scary.
She's really just scary because she's so good at strategy, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, she's not like an evil empress, like, you know, lording over the people or anything. Like, she's actually very representative of what the people want, not like what she wants. She's not like forcing the people to do her bidding. She's more doing the bidding of the people in a way.
Yeah, she's very fair, and she really puts all of their needs ahead of hers at all. Like, as we see a little bit, and well, I'm sure we'll talk about her story quest, but she has the catching problem of, I need to do everything and not sleep.
And she has a little cave that she hides in when she needs to sleep, unlike Kaching. But yeah, so Kakomi twirls in down from the sky, surrounded in bubbles, and she brings in some reinforcements. Beto talks about how Kakomi owes her one for it, too. Kazuha and Goru are so excited to be reunited, as apparently they are besties. And afterwards, we become the general of Swordfish 2?
Two.
Two. Like Dookie.
Aw.
Like, why couldn't we captain of Swordfish? I can't even fucking say it.
Swordfish.
Swordfish. I have to say it this way because I cannot say Swordfish. Fuck. I can't do it in a regular accent.
We should have been like the captain of the goldfish.
No, the captain of shark bait. Woo ha ha.
I would have liked to be captain of shark bait.
Why not just Captain Chum?
That's Paimon.
Captain Chum, party of one.
But basically our role with Kakomi for the rest of the Archon is we become the captain of Swordfish 2. We help the Resistance and we help Kakomi. And then we get really pissed and go kind of off the rail when we go and find Scaramouche. And that's pretty much all we see of Kakomi in the Archon line.
Yeah, it's bullshit.
Yeah, no, that she does, for such an integral person for the whole fight, because like they've been fighting them for a while. since the Vision Hunt decree started. So like she's been like doing stuff and like really been involved. And it's like, all right, that was her part. See you later.
Right.
Which is such bullshit because I love Inazuma. I will say the Archon line is kind of the worst. Worst out of the ones that we have been through. Mostly because we have so many amazing elements at play and all of them are underutilized. Because the Resistance would have been an amazing thing to see continued on. Because like we have Kokomi, who's this amazing general and is supposed to be the foil to the Raiden Shogun. Yet we barely see her. And it isn't until you do her character story where you see a bit more of her personality as a general and as a leader. And it feels like what we should have gotten within the Archon line. Justice for Kokomi, man.
Yeah, it feels like there would be a lot of good like prequel type content for that whole, you know, Watatsumi versus the Shogunate kind of storyline.
Yeah.
Because you hear so many legendary things about her, and then you have Goro and like their whole army, you have Kazuo and Beto being involved, and like the whole like people's rebellion against the Vision Hunt decree is so compelling. And for, you know, everyone loves like a good band of rebels. So
fuck yeah.
There's definitely a lot of potential, like storytelling potential that we sort of miss out on because we're coming in at the tail end of the whole conflict.
Exactly.
The tail end.
Yes. It's a very excited tale.
My Sinoism for the episode.
It's interesting too, because once you like deep dive on Kokomi's family.
Sorry. Wow. Oh my, I'm a Sino has possessed me. I can't help it.
Oh no, Hermanubis. But when you deep dive on the Sanganomiya clan and Watatsumi Island and the conflicts that Watatsumi has had in the past, you start to see all of these comparisons to what is happening right now in Inazuma. And it is so sad that you don't get to see more of that, or that they haven't done more flashbacks to it, because we've only had one event that has brought us back to Watatsumi, and it really brought you to Inkonomiya. And that was like that Tri-Realm or whatever event where we had to go back down and deal with the Shrine Maiden with the snakeskin mask.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we learned a little bit about Watatsumi and a little bit about Kokomi in that event, but not nearly enough. We did, though, learn more about her in her story quest, at least, which I feel like had like six different parts to it. I did not realize how long her story quest was.
You know, there was a like a week or so ago that Fiend said to me, can you come to Kokomi's hideout? And I was like, what are you talking about? She's like, you know, the hideout that she goes to in the story quest. And I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I've done all the story quests. She had to take me. I had no recollection. And I rewatched the story quest and I was like, I think I was asleep during the whole thing because I don't remember any of it. I love Kokomi, but that story quest bored me. And I think if you like military and strategy, it's fantastic. But I was like, oh my God, I can't.
Yeah, I asked Tiff if she could come take a picture with me in the hideout. And she was like, what? And I was like, you know, Kokomi's like secret like reading nook.
I thought I was the one that went.
Yeah, because yeah, Tiff didn't know where it was.
I
was like, wait a minute. We were waiting for the fishy animation.
Yes, yes, you're right. Yeah. Or like, Al, wait for her to emote. Like we're in Fortnite.
Just like, yas.
But my favorite part of her story quest is the very last part, which is like the peace negotiations with Sara.
That was the most intense shit and I loved it. And why was it at the very end and it was kind of like a deep fake? And I'm like, why?
You know what my favorite part of Kokomi's story was?
Ending it?
The fact that Goro was only in it for a minute.
Wow. We're gonna be talking a lot about him, so you best be prepared. So a quick recap just for anyone before we jump into the storyline. You cannot do Kokomi's story quest until you have finished Inazuma because you have to know that the war is over and that the Vision Hunt decree is no more. The Resistance won. Woo! Unlike what they did 2,000 years ago. So we are told that we have to go back to Watatsumi Island because there's a victory feast and we have been invited as the Traveler, as, you know, Captain of Swordfish 2, And the underlying theme throughout the entire story quest, despite it having all these different segments where you learn different things, is that the people of Watsumi Island do not trust the Tenryou Commission. And the Tenryou Commission is led by the Tenryou clan. Part of that is Kujosara. And they are the people in charge of the war and the army and stuff like that. So Watsumi, despite winning, the people who live there are very sussed out still about the Tenryou Commission. And there is a big rumor that they are in cahoots with the Fatui. So there's a lot of tensions everywhere. And that's actually where we start when we get there. We meet Goru, who is talking to some members of the army and the resistance. And they're like freaking out. They're really scared. They're talking about how the Fatui is near. They're trying to come up with a strategy. Goru is trying to calm them down, reminding them that, you know, you have to trust the divine priestess. They even mention at one point that they think the Kami Satos may be included, which blew my mind because we've never heard anything bad about the Kami Satos.
Yeah, I think it's only come out of our own mouths about Ayato.
Yeah, exactly. I know. We're the only people sus of him.
Yeah, everybody else in Inazuma is like, these people are great. Meanwhile, we're like, secret society.
There's only one person here that's really sus of Ayato, Feeny.
Oh, I am.
I was going to say, everyone is sus of him.
Mm-hmm. I don't believe a damn thing that comes out of his mouth.
All I know is that he tries to poison Toma every 3 days.
That's true, but I think that's a kink.
Yeah, it's out of love.
It's out of love. And also the fact that he was so cute, with like, he really made Ito think he was really into the beetle battles. And I think he was, like, legitimately. I think he thought it was cool.
He was like, yeah, whatever you say, Ayato. So that's really the first part of the storyline. The second part is we go looking for Kakomi. And when we go to find her, we run into another issue with a merchant and two Watsumi military folk who are basically accusing the merchant of like being in cahoots with the Fatui, because everyone's in cahoots with the Fatui. And Kakomi kind of steps in and is like, y'all chill. I get it. I get where you're coming from, but we got to give this guy like his rights and we got to figure it out. And part of that, Kakomi ends up bringing us to her secret cave,
which I'll show you on the website in case you don't remember where it is either.
I remember her cave because it reminded me of Albedo's cave.
It's so true.
There are books in a very humid environment. Vanessa would lose her shit.
Yeah, not an archival safe haven. No.
In my mind, I'm like, not Vanessa with an E.
Why do we go to the cave in the first place? Is it because Kakomi needs to reset her introvert-like energy levels?
Yes.
It's because of, like, I want to say it was number 98 in the list of things to do if Kakomi's not around. So, like, we went to go look for her, and there was a guard that was like, oh, wait, she's not here, but let me look at the general operations directives. And she went to he went to number 98, which was if a visitor from afar, a VIP, mind you, and nobody knows where Kakomi is, they should proceed southward until they come to a tree.
So this is like after we've settled everything with the merchant?
Yes. Okay. Then we go, yeah, after the merchant stuff, this is when she sends us over down yonder, which is so funny though. It's like, if you can't find me and they're a VIP and they're from afar, follow this. I want to know if it would have been like, if you were a regular schmo, did you go northward and go fall off the cliff? I don't know.
And if you're a regular schmo, come back tomorrow.
Yeah. But the fact that she has these books and stuff too, like she writes out not only her military strategy, which Goru, when we first meet him in the beginning of the story, does say like he's carrying five of them and they're only one portion of something for war stuff. She's written a whole lot more. But then to know that she's gone beyond that. This is like how the Sangaromiya shrine works. Here are a whole bunch of volumes of what to do if you sneeze and it's a Tuesday and Goro's not around.
She truly follows that mindset when, you know, when you're at a job and they're like, you know, we want you to write down everything you do because, like, hypothetically speaking, you could be kidnapped tomorrow. Like, have you ever had a boss say that to you? Because I have.
You have?
I had a boss say this to me. Yeah, they were like, we need to make guides for everything because you could like get kidnapped tomorrow and we'd still need to do your work.
I'm so glad that was their worry.
Wait, did you get laid off 2 days later?
Yeah, basically. And then avoided kidnapping. Very. And then I kind of made a face and he was like, okay, well, maybe you could get hit by a bus. And I was like, you did not make this better.
No, not at all.
You're not going to get Regina George on my watch, damn it.
I was like, how about Amanda? You could get really sick one day and we'd want to give you the time to heal.
Yeah. Amanda, you might find a better job.
Yeah, that's what I did like 6 months later. So... But that's like what Kokomi did. She was like, I might get kidnapped tomorrow, guys. And I mean, maybe with Kokomi, it's likely, as you know, with her 95 titles.
Yeah.
She is Daenerys Targaryen, but without the incest.
I feel like you say that about a lot of characters.
Yeah. But she's actually a leader. She just doesn't have dragons.
I'm going to start writing down everyone that Al says.
Yes. Yeah. To be on our Tales of Teyvat bingo cards.
Yeah.
Please, yeah, take a shot.
I'll call someone Daenerys.
And Tim says a side joke. And Feeny says interesting.
And one of us sings.
And B sings.
And I correct a pronunciation.
Throw bitties.
Little bits.
But yeah, what ends up happening when we get to the cave, Tiff? Do you find a sleeping Kokomi or a re...
She's like out of it. She's just like... I don't know what's going on, but you found me. Like, almost like she's just so exhausted. And we're like, do you need some help? And she sends us to, like, look for a book, basically.
So on brand for us.
She can't remember what she was supposed to be doing. We end up finding the book. Basically, we find out, like, Kokomi writes down every interaction she has as well, which is not a surprise. But then, like, she falls asleep and we're like, let's just leave her. She needs it. But it's, like, the same day as the victory party. So, like, once she actually does wake up, she's like, oh, my God, there's no time. But, like, she, like, calculated how much energy she needed. And it was, like, 3 energy to go to the party and restore and be better and stuff. But, yeah, she's just, like, napping down there.
I don't think this ever happened to Orabashi.
He didn't need a little naparoo.
I mean, I always need a naparoo. So maybe I'm also not Orabashi.
None of us are Orabashi.
What?
Why? Because we don't have hemipenes.
What?
I don't know what's wrong with me today. Just dick on the brain, man.
Wait, we don't have what?
All reptiles have hemipenes. So like a male snake has 2 penises and they're called hemipenes.
Like Zhongli. Oh.
That's why all the porn of Zhongli and Nouvellette has given them 2 dicks, which is accurate. Which is canonically accurate when it comes to reptilians.
Well, for Nouvellette, maybe. I don't know about Zhongli. I know he likes to take the form of a dragon, but he's not really a dragon.
That's a good point. You know, that's something we need to talk about one day.
It's a manifestation of his guilt for the genocide of the dragons.
Oh my God, that got deep.
I mean, he was probably around for it, so.
We went from heavy beans.
To genocide.
To genocide. You know, the logical connection.
That's our podcast in a nutshell.
This is truly the Tales of Teyvat experience that everyone wanted.
Dicks to genocide. Throw in a surprise incest in there and we're all covered.
All pressing topics will be reviewed in this season. But that being said, I think it's really interesting that Kokomi has an energy system. Like, how does she know how much energy she needs for things?
I think it's really admirable that she's, like, self-regulating like that. She knows her limits, and she's like, I need to recharge. This isn't going to work. Nope. Excuse me. I'm off to my lady cave.
Wait, hear me out. Hear me out. What if it's... What if she just takes a 5-hour energy and she's like, it's been 2 hours, I only have 3 energy left.
Oh my God, that would be so funny. I think she's a robot like Lynette.
Oh no, 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 no. No!
She's giving Lynette vibes when she goes to her cave to recharge.
At least she's not monotone.
True. But I love Lynette.
I do. That's why that's an icon.
Anyway, How does this cave adventure end, Tiff?
Not the way we want it to.
With Goru showing up?
Ugh, thank God, no.
Just hate him so much.
After she regenerates her energy, we go off to the victory party. And she's got, like, enough energy. It's not that she doesn't like people. She doesn't like peopling too much. It takes out a lot of energy out of her. And before, like, she got really tired, basically, she went on a walk with us. And everybody on Watasumi Island was like, hey, don't trust Tenryou. Hey, my fish are gone. Hey, this is going on. Like, nobody left this lady alone. Like, they have no boundaries. She was just out for a walk with her friend and people were throwing problems at her. So, like, to her, relaxing is writing out her military strategy plans and reading a book about military thesis and stuff like that. She gets really tired when she's talking to people. And then, so we had to then, after she woke up, we had to go be like, go talk to more people now. Have a speech.
Sorry, we have a party to go to, Miss Ma'am.
Yeah. Get your party shoes on.
You have a speech to make. You are not consenting, but you will make a speech and you will throw up in front of everybody.
And during this, like, victory party too, don't we have to, like, go around and, like, ask people their opinions on, like, the Tenryou Commission? Am I remembering that properly?
I think we were asking people kind of like the status of negotiations, maybe.
I think that most people were sus about Tenryou and the Fatui thing. And, like, the earlier merchant that you mentioned, like, him having some stuff missing and kind of blaming the Fatui. But really, in the end, he was, like, hoarding a necessity, like, an island necessity. So while, like, he didn't get in trouble because he was from another island and selling fish, like, he got in trouble because he was almost, like, inflating costs of necessary items. Kind of like what happens with, like, surge pricing. So, like, we're trying to figure out, like, really what's going on. Because a lot of people are like, this is going, like, it's kind of like we're trying to get a feel for the rumors and how much is really going to be happening. Because Kakomi is going to then be meeting with Sara for peace negotiations. So we're trying to figure out, like, where did this whole thing come up? Like, how did we find out about the potential Tenryou Fatui problem?
Mm-hmm.
Which, while not directly at the party, but shortly after, we find out the people fucking made it up. They made that shit up. So the original guards that we run into that were talking about this whole Fatui Tenryou thing, we end up going and talking back to the dude again. And he basically ends up just kind of telling on himself and says, like, I made this up because we've lost so many people in battle and it just doesn't seem fair that they sacrificed all this. And we just, like, gave up. Like, we won. Now we're just friends again with all the other islands and all the other people. Like, that's not right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It, which is, you know, you can understand a bit, but, like, that's kind of what happens in battle and war, is that somebody's going to win and, like, yeah, they lost people and that's sad, but so did the other people.
There's casualties on both sides of war, yeah. But I mean, ugh.
But what makes that whole thing really interesting is that the entire Watasumi army does think that it's real. And before the peace negotiations with Kujosara, which is the last piece of the story quest, they don't have time to basically tell everyone, hey, y'all, not true. So we're invited to go to the peace negotiations because, duh, we're invited to everything somewhat important in this game. And we show up. Sara's like, why are they there? And Kakomi's like, for peace. And Sara's like, lit.
Actual quote.
Yeah. The game. They start to do these negotiations, which are really interesting, you know, stuff like, you know, Watasumi is allowed to fish over by Narukami again. But you're going to have to pay taxes before you can bring everything back. And Kokomi's like, yeah, that's fine. But you got to protect us too. And so it's like, you know, shit like that. And they get to this part where Sara's like, okay, well, the Watasumi army has to basically go away and no longer be, or join, like, the Tenryou Commission and be underneath the Tenryou Commission. And Kokomi's like, listen, Sara, like, no. I don't think we can do that yet. Like, it's not a short-term goal. And she's kind of like, I can't settle on this. Like, we need this. And then someone on the Watasumi side is like, fuck you, Sara. We don't trust you. Y'all are cahooting with the Fatui. And then they almost have a fight. And we kind of get in the middle. And we, like, throw our, like, guide to war book at Paimon.
She's, like, looking through it, trying to figure out What do I do?
Yeah, she's like, is it 66? Is it 94? Is it 108? I don't know which one to look for.
The answer is you fucking fucked up when you had to open the book. You should have memorized that shit.
True. Like
Art of War told you to.
And so we find out through all this, though, that there are two very sus Tenryo Commission members. And Kokomi and Sara both notice it. And Sara finds out that these two Tenryo Commission people did actually talk with the Fatui. Now, they didn't necessarily cahoot with the Fatui, but they were basically like, yeah, the people who used to work under the Crimson Witch, they want revenge, is basically what they're saying. And we talked to them. And Sara's like, are you two fucking kidding me?
They were doing conspiracy to commit treason.
Basically.
Just a little conspiracy of treason.
Because of that, Kokomi is able to be like, yeah, so do you get why we can't let you govern our army right now? And Sara's like, yes.
Yeah. She like lays down the law to these like fuckers, and she's just like, great, now you made mom look bad in front of the special guests, and now we're gonna go home and you're gonna get a spanking.
And it's so funny because Sara's literally like, you two here now. Yeah. And I was like, I was so scared. I was like, this is what Ito likes, guys.
He likes someone strong. You know.
Like Sara and Goru.
I wouldn't put Goru in that.
But that's really what we see surface level of Kokomi. And surface level, I love Kokomi. When I look deeper, I love Kokomi even more. So Kokomi is part of the Sanganomiya clan. She is the only known blood heir, which is very interesting. You know, what happened to the rest of her family? It sounds like her mom narrates one of the videos about her when she's like first made the divine priestess, but we've never seen her parents.
Mm-hmm. We've never seen them. And there's never a mention, I don't believe, of her father. It's just her mother speaking in the intro video. And like, she has this little quote of, as the ruler is, so shall the people be. Like, she's like saying, like, basically her little girl, because she was like, she ascended to the divine priestess really young. You're basically not old enough to have this job, but hey, tough shit, you got it.
Great. So another pageant mom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sucks to suck.
Which makes me wonder if like her mom was sick or something too, like knew that she was going to die soon. And that's why Kokomi had to step up.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of reminiscent of Ayaka's story, really, with her mom, too.
Do we even know, though, if it's, like, running in, like, a family? Or could it be anyone in the clan that inherits the divine priestness?
I think, regardless, she doesn't have any cousins. So, but that is a good question. Like, was it her mom or her aunt or a grandmother?
Or her vision? Because I'm wondering if this clan is just like, they have a vision. They are the new priestess.
Oh, like that's what made them chosen kind of a thing?
Yeah. Like, is it just like certain families and like someone gets a vision and they're like, that's, you know, like the calling or something? Like, there's not enough information on how she, quote unquote, ascended to become the divine priestess. I don't understand how that was decided.
I think it's because she was last of like, the clan, like, if whether it be her grandmother, aunt, whoever who took over, who was the divine priestess beforehand, we know that Kokomi would have been the only heir, meaning that it's possible that it's only a matriarchal line. And so like, maybe she has cousins, but they're all dudes and she's just the only girl.
Yeah, but I don't also know if we know specifically that it has to be a woman, outside of the fact that Genshin likes to put women, especially in Inazuma, in charge.
You're saying like it could have been a divine priest?
Yeah.
At one point, yeah, I mean,
we really don't know enough about it. Like B said, it's kind of a little wishy-washy in that.
The whole thing behind the divine priestess and that role is supposed to be the will of Orabashi living on within humans, sort of like what Tiff was saying earlier in the episode. And so what we do know is that, you know, when Orabashi was killed by A back in the day, its resentment lived on, poisoning, you know, the island, which is where we get into Tatarugami, you know, poisoning that whole island that Orabashi's corpse was on. But the flip side of the resentment on the island for A is the protection of Watatsumi that is attached to the will of Urabashi. That also allegedly lived on and lives on currently within the Sangonomiya bloodline. And so the current heir of the bloodline, I guess, is called the Divine Priestess. So it would make sense if, like, this is just it's passed down, you know, among the family. And, you know, maybe it is like a matriarchal thing. Like, once the matriarch passes, then the next generation is, you know, sort of crowned the heir. But that person supposedly inherits the god's will to protect the land and the people. Now, is that really happening or is that just a legend?
Right. And I will say, if you look at Kakomi's vision story that she has in her character story list, it does say something about how, as the divine priestess, Kakomi naturally has her own vision. So it's suggesting that she had a vision when she became divine priestess.
Well, she got her vision by wishing to protect Watatsumi and allow its people to lead happy lives. Like, she actually was like staring out at the sea and like made this wish, and that's when she got her vision. So I was wondering, like, maybe her clan sees that as a sign of like inheriting the will or something.
And it also brings back into question too, like, how are you getting a vision? Because it's like, did the will of Urabashi give her the vision? Like, do these other gods also help give you visions? You know what I mean? Because he was a god and she prays to him.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, because he's not a part of the throne. He's not a part of the seven thrones.
But wouldn't you think, because the people of Watatsumi worship Urabashi, that they wouldn't be able to get visions? Because they don't worship any of the seven archons connected to Celestia?
Yeah, I mean, it is a good question. I mean, like we've talked about before, I think, when someone's will or ambition is fierce enough, I think it's on autopilot up in Celestia. And it's just like, oh, we got another one. Send down the vision.
It kind of leans toward that theory and those things that we've discussed previously about how people get their visions. That maybe this actually is a good proponent that the gods actually aren't involved. Because, like you said, in Watatsumi, they were all worshiping Urabashi and not the shogun. The shogun wouldn't then get, the shogun was pissed and was like, I'm not giving anybody a vision over here. I mean, she was a little busy anyway, but.
And I do want to give a quick recap. We've brought up Urabashi quite a few times. So for travelers who maybe don't remember, Urabashi fled to Inkanomiya back in the day when he could not defeat the Raiden Shogun. Well, when he couldn't defeat A/Makoto or Zhongli.
Well, yeah. And that was during the Archon War.
Yeah, during the Archon War. And he fled to Inkanomiya, which, if you don't remember, Inkanomiya was a place that sank deep into the sea after the second who came and Primordial One had a fight. And Inkanomiya was completely forgotten by the gods, and they lived in the dark, and they had to build their own light, and they sacrificed children.
But what sea? Excuse me? Which sea? The Sea of Quanta?
No, most likely the Dark Sea. But in Inkanomiya, they started to worship Urabashi, and as Brandon mentioned at the start of the episode, he started to research and study and do experiments. I don't know how snakes do that, but he did.
Don't you just love to imagine like a giant snake with like little tiny arms and like some spectacles and like a giant lab coat, like tilting a little beaker?
No. I actually hate it.
And sort of like using its like little baby arms to like flip the pages of Sun and Moon. No. And like has a little teeny tiny pencil that it just sort of like pulls up to its giant snake maw and is like,
just like a little wiggly tail holding that pen, like,
there used to be dragons.
Wait, I'm just picturing the snake that Lucy Liu voices in Kung Fu Panda. Except giant now. just oh my god.
I love the idea that Urabashi's just this huge nerd, like this gentle nerd, like lab nerd, science nerd, just wanting to read and educate himself, just really like, you know, become a better snake god.
Maybe he was the original resident of Kakomi's cave.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. No, he might have been too big for it.
That's where he stored his little books.
Just like the Adepti can become big and small. He could become big and small.
It's his version of a Seren teapot.
But at some point, Urabashi realized that he could create this coral with his body and that he could help the people of Enkanomiya rise back to the surface and rejoin Teyvat. And that's how Watasumi Island became a thing. The Sanganomiya clan was one of the noble families that came out of Enkanomiya, which is interesting because you find out a little bit more about them in the book Sanganomiya Chronicles that you can find at the Komori Tea House. They basically say that the Sanganomiya clan, actually, are the people who named Watasumi Watasumi. It means God of the Sea. And that was in honor of Urabashi. And that on Watasumi, they built a shrine. They had government in the shrine. There were no commissions. No one from the shogunate was there. They all did it themselves. And by they, I mean shrine maidens. Shrine maidens ran this entire island from head to toe. And that's why, I guess maybe there is just divine priestess then.
Inazuma's full of a lot of like tough ass bitches. I love it.
Yeah, it's amazing. And basically, this book chronicles their way of life. It doesn't really give us a lot of details, unfortunately, until one day, Makoto was busy doing something, and during the Archon War, A was like, yeah, fuck this snake and his research. And she decided that Watasumi was going to join them, and a war broke out, and they bring in like this other clan, the Yuna clan, which I have a lot of thoughts about. Maybe I'll mention later. But basically, eventually, A kills Urabashi in this battle, and that leaves his skeleton behind. So you can see how big Urabashi really is. And yeah, great time. So that's my quick recap on who Urabashi was and just where the people of Watasumi or originate from. They're really not the people of Teyvat.
You know that Ace stole the technology to build puppets from Urabashi after killing him. Like, that was the whole battle. It was like, give me your science notes. And Urabashi was like, no, leave me alone. Like, hiding his little books under his giant lab coat.
I love Beast's theory of this story. I was just going to say, though, too, if you're interested in Urabashi, you should stick around in our later part of our season as we come back to Watasumi.
And you can learn more about Enkanomiya, I think, in season 2. We did an Enkanomiya episode 2. So if you're interested in learning more about all things west of Narugami Shrine, you can. But it's really interesting because Urabashi, like, in my opinion, just saying randomly, I really don't think A wanted to kill him, but A killed him because this one member of the Yuna clan, who the Yuna clan was entrusted by the Sanganomiyas to run the navy of Watasumi.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically Moon, who you might recognize from Moon's Moon, which is a bow. She also was like besties with a blind 900-year-old whale. Don't worry, and this blind 900-year-old whale also commanded 500 narwhals and 500 humpback whales.
It's just them communicating like, hello, hello.
Yeah, it's Dory.
It is Dory. That is what, that's just it. That's it.
But this whale was really big. They said it could have swallowed coral islands, but they also had jellyfish and things like that as servants, which is all very interesting because Kokomi in her one video sees a whale above her, and we all know Kokomi has like a jellyfish that she uses in her burst or in her elemental. And I don't know if you guys remember, there is a random world quest in Watasumi where you find the skeleton of like a sea beast washed up on the shore.
Yeah!
This girl Kumi is like, this is my best friend Katira, and we're like, what? And we basically find out from a woman named Anissa, who is a Sumeru researcher in oceanography, because of course she is.
Mm-hmm.
She's in Watasumi and we save her, and she basically is able to like look at this skeleton and say, oh, this is an umibozu, which is like this intelligent sea creature, and that they're basically extinct because of how big they are, and that like they were fishermen's arch enemies and all this jazz. And she's able to tell Kumi that Katira probably lived a very happy life and had many kids. So I'm very curious if like the whale Kakomi sees.
When does she see that whale?
I think it's in her demo or her miscellany. I don't remember which one. It's when she's diving into the sea, like Fremenet, to avoid her emotions. And so I'm just curious if like this Moon's whale with the army of everything else, Kakomi's whale and this dead whale, and maybe even Child's whale, are all related somehow. But I digress. I go back to Urabashi. Moon's disciple killed Sasayori, who was one of A's best friends. They're on the blanket. They're a Tengu person. And then A came over and was like, yeah, fuck you guys.
I love it that you're just like on the blanket. Like,
yeah.
Like, and what's funny is we all know exactly what you're talking about when you say on the blanket.
I think most people who like lore do.
Yeah,
which
probably.
Is so crazy. Yeah. But if you don't know what I'm talking about, there's a cutscene in one of A's videos when she was released. I don't know if it's her demo or her miscellany or whatever, where we see all these people sitting on like a picnic blanket with her and they all basically die.
Yeah, it's very cheery.
Yeah, very happy.
Then Makoto dies too, just this way. Make sure, get in that good feelings.
All the good feelings.
One of those feel good Genshin videos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it shows you like really quick glimpses of everyone's deaths too.
Yeah.
Or how A reacted to their deaths. And that's how we get Urabashi dying. So Urabashi was killed really not because he did anything, but because Aku, the disciple of Moon and her sister, killed A's friend. It won't go into it. There's a lot I could talk about with that, but I think it's really interesting because Sasayori, the friend who was killed, was a Tengu clan member. And we all know that Kujo Sara is also a Tengu. They actually wore like the same red mask on the side of their heads. And I think it's really interesting because Kakomi, in my opinion, could be referred to as similar to Moon or similar to her sister Ayame, who, by the way, guys, Ayame, no one knows what happened to her. She like went to the bottom of the sea. That's what they think, to gather the souls of her friends or to make storms and kill people. They really don't know.
So the Sea of Quanta.
Maybe the Sea of Quanta.
Isn't Kujo Sara an orphan? Maybe she's a relative of Ayame.
Yeah, that's a good thought.
Well, Ayame died during the Archon War, so if Kujo Sara is 2,000 years old,
she could.
Unless Ayame, similarly to the Blue Oni, didn't die and ran away and lived their life.
Wait, I thought you said Ayame. We don't know what happened to Ayame.
We don't, but it was 2,000 years ago.
Well, no, I'm saying she doesn't have to be Ayame's daughter. She could just be a descendant of Ayame.
She would be a descendant of Sasayori, the Tengu guy.
Oh, Ayame was not a Tengu, I see.
Ayame is the twin sister of Moon, and they were both from the Yuna clan. So they're originally from Enkanomiya.
Okay, and their disciple killed the Tengu.
Yeah, their disciple, this guy, Aku, that they took under their wing that eventually fell in love with Moon as well, he killed him. And he literally was like, and one day I'm going to kill this guy. And then he did. And then he fucked shit up. So.
Okay. So if anything, she would be a descendant of the one that got killed.
Yes. And it's really interesting because Narukami and those islands control most of like Inazuman history. Aku is seen as like this evil, terrible man who was like trying to take over Yashiori Island and stuff like that, when he really was like just trying to like defend his land, and like they were looking for resources on Yashiori Island. I'm not saying that he was like the best man, because he did make a house over on Yashiori Island, but it's interesting how like the history is controlled by the shogunate in this situation. And is why a lot of people are even sus of like the people of Watsusumi. And we saw that in that very random TCG event right before Fontaine released.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Kakomi comes over to play TCG and she actually plays against A. And afterwards, we're talking to her and she's basically like, yeah, I'm not really interested in TCG. This is all like political bullshit.
I can't believe that she isn't like the ultimate TCG champion, considering how good she is at strategy.
She should be.
Yeah.
She kicked my ass a couple of times because I suck at that event.
Well, I'm not saying that she isn't good at it or that she doesn't enjoy it. I'm saying that she did not want to be there because she doesn't like people. It makes sense.
Yeah, I'm just saying I find it strange that she isn't like the boss of TCG and all of Teyvat.
Oh, yeah, like she should be over Sino. But instead it's Sino, the general mantra. Also, when Takomi is on Narukami for this TCG event, she's like out trying to buy books, or I think Goru is actually buying books for her at some point, you know, stuff like that. Did you guys know that in Kakomi's idol animation, she's reading Shingsho's book, A Legend of Sword?
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? I didn't notice that.
Which is really cute because we all know it's like very popular in Inazuma.
And it's very sci-fi, just to circle back to Star Wars.
Yeah! Or the Ark spaceship. Dun, dun, dun. But anyway, I'm not going to say anything more about the Yuna clan because I could. And I'm not. I said too much.
They're going to come and get me. I've said too much.
I'll talk more about them with Urabashi. But all that aside, too, there is one other event that I thought was very interesting Kakomi showed up in, and that was Bottle Land.
Yeah. What the fuck, man? I mean, I get it. But also, you know, I would have never thought to see Eula, Klee, and Kokomi in the same vicinity.
And Kale.
And Kale.
And Kaya.
I expected Kale to be around like any Monstadian just because of the manga. But for Kokomi to be involved, it's like, well, hello, you're very far away from home. Hello.
For travelers who are like, what is a Bottle Land? Bottle Land was a summer event. I don't really remember the actual title of it, where basically we went out into the Sumeru Desert, found a bottle, went inside the bottle, and we were there with a bunch of friends and we helped them rebuild the mechanics inside the bottle and all this jazz. Very like your Saren teapot, but in a Ginny type of thing.
Yes, and run by Oceanids.
Yes, which was wild.
With a lot of roller coasters.
And Kakomi is there looking for this like special pearl artifact that has been missing, and they haven't been able to look for it because of the closed borders in Inazuma.
It's the Genesis Pearl.
I mean, it has to be, right?
No, it doesn't have to be.
I feel like it has to be.
I mean, there's a lot of pearls at the bottom of Watasumi, too.
Yeah, the Sango pearls.
Yeah, but they're like normal pearls. This is a special pearl.
I don't know if it could call me.
I mean, she is an heir. Right?
Yeah.
I just like the fact that she went to Battle Land to go look for the thing everybody's trying to find.
Just inside a genie bottle in the desert.
Yeah.
I'm a genie in a bottle. Yeah.
I don't really know how she ends up there, but she does. And we really never find out if she found the artifact or anything like that either. And it bears a lot of questions. Like, are they bringing us back to Watasumi soon? Inkanomiya soon? That's going to be a year ago once the summer happens, you know? A long time.
I hope so. I would love to go back to Inkanomiya.
I feel like we don't get a lot of Inazuma events anymore.
I mean, the most recent one I remember is just the It wasn't the Iridori Festival. It was the stupid... It's not the bongo event, but the drum event.
Oh, the Arataki mm-hmm. music event.
Yeah, that's the one I remember.
You consider that a big event?
No, I mean, of the most recent.
They're bringing a lot of the Inazuma characters out into other areas, which I think makes sense because they've been trapped in Inazuma for so long because of the Sokoku decree. So they're all like, hell yeah, let's get the hell out of here and like go on vacation and like go travel and meet other people and have some like cultural exchange in other places, you know. I mean, I thought that was really smart that they brought Ayato in along with Ayaka in that film festival event in Fontaine.
Yes.
And they were kind of like, hey, let's do some like a cultural exchange here and like get to mingling and enrich our nation as best we can with, you know, the freedom that we now have.
Yeah, I would 100% agree. I hated how sus Ayato was the whole fucking time, but I agree. And then they had Goru come out most recently with Kirara?
Yeah, they stopped by at the potion event, and it was very cute. I was so surprised. I'm like, Goru's here! It made sense that Kirara was there. But Garu.
And they're like friends.
I mean, the doggy and the cat, sure, why not?
I mean, they should be enemies.
Lisa's like, wait, I might know somebody who's going to like you too.
It's like, can I have a play date for my young wolf pup?
Let me go find the wolf.
I know, I don't understand why she wouldn't bring up Diona, but okay.
Yeah, fuck Diona. She only cares about the wolf.
Diona had already shown up in the event. She could not be brought up again. And Lisa is afraid that Diona is just going to tell everyone that she's a drunk.
Well, because she says it about everyone.
Literally, she's like, I can't let these cuties know that I'm a drunk. So I'm just going to go find my son. Which she basically says. She's like, this little baby puppy needs to meet you.
Wouldn't it be funny if she was like, there's someone I have to introduce you to. His name is Draff. And just sort of like shoves a pile of books in front of Diona's face.
Just like, have fun. Have at thee.
Diona's like, he's definitely a drunk. She hates her forefather.
Understandably so, though.
I mean, understandably so, but also you can kind of understand why Draft's an alcoholic. Like, his best friend died.
Oh.
His best friend died. Yeah,
that too.
And he has to tell his best friend's son.
Yeah.
And he hasn't. Poor Timmy.
Oh, yeah! Oh, shit!
Is that the first Wait, Timmy?
Timmy?
Yeah, Timmy on the bridge. Timmy's dad is dead. He died in a hunting accident with Draft.
And Draff has not told him.
I thought
him.
That was Joel's dad.
No.
Oh, Joel's dad is the one that froze to death.
Yeah, Joel's dad's up on Dragon's.
Now he's suspended, right.
Joel's dad is now a water flower.
Jesus.
A lot of fucked up kids in us.
Yeah.
So many.
These kids are so better off without parents.
Do you think that Joel's whopper dad, like, takes him out like into the wilderness, like, look at, like, let's go admire the flowers. You know, like, really tries to sell like whopper flowers. Like, they're very misunderstood. Joel
screams because there's a whopper flower. He's like, Joel, don't scare them, be nice. look, you can pet their leaves.
And they get such a bad rap, but you know, none of this would happen if people would stop picking those radishes.
That's true.
But Monstat children aside, back to Kokomi, there aren't a lot of characters that have things to say about Kokomi, which I thought was really, really interesting. Like, Beto has no voice line about her, despite the fact that it's insinuated in a few cutscenes that they work together a lot, which is weird.
Well, doesn't one of them say that she's sort of impossible to get to because anytime she's walking around, people swarm her. And, like, you can't get through the citizens of Watatsumi, but even if you did, you'd also have to get through the layer of shrine maidens that surround her anytime she goes out.
You know who says that? It's, like, the most randomest person, in my opinion. It's Hazo.
Oh.
Hazo is like, yeah, I've never met her because every time I've tried to, she is being attacked, basically. Mm-hmm. And then Kokomi says too, she's like, yeah, I saw this Tenryou guy like to show up, but he says he's a detective. She's a little sus they think about him, which is fine, but for the most part every voice line about her is like, I admire her, I go to her for advice,
she's good at strategy,
yeah, she has good war ethics. Except for A's. A basically says something along the line of like, we need to keep the people of Watatsumi accountable for what they've done.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ma'am.
You pushed them to that point, bitch.
She's like, yeah, I killed their god, but I still let them worship it. They should be thanking me.
Literally what she says, basically. Like, ma'am, I don't think you get how things work. But it's interesting. I wish more people had things to say about her, especially like, you know, I feel like in Bottle Land, you know, we know Klee thinks she's really pretty, which, you know, Klee's bright and all this stuff. But we don't really, I don't know, we don't learn that much about her. Oh, but we do learn that she gets motion sick really quick.
But then why is she spinning?
Right? Remember she doesn't like the roller coaster in Bottle Land?
No, she does not. She's like,
she was like, I think I'm a pass on the next ride. Like,
she's
aww.
Like, I'm a tilt-a-whirl kind of girl, not like a roller coaster person.
Yeah, she's like, do you have like a carousel that goes like 90?
Right.
Because I can do that. And I can do that right now for you if you don't have the carousel. And I'll give you bubbles. Screw bubble wands. I'm a bubble wand.
How about a water park?
She's like, have you ever considered, you're an oceanid. Have you ever considered making this a water amusement park?
Where's the lazy river?
In the middle of the desert.
Where's the log flume?
Can we have like bumper boats? But they're clams.
Oh my God. I would love, it's like the swan ride where you're just like beating the fuck out of it. No, is it the Frogger? I can't remember. There's a ride in Cedar Point where you're on these little frogs and you're just whamming into people, but it would be clam.
I don't know. But the last voice line I wanted to just mention was Yai's. Yai Miko's like, all the shrine maidens are so cute, because Yai Miko and Lisa are the same. And she goes, I really just want to see her do the dance of divine peace.
Yeah, I want to see this dance too.
I know what it made me think of, the first thing that came into my head. The Master Diviner, is that her name in Star Rail?
Oh, I thought you were going to say Nilu.
Who?
Doesn't register.
I have no idea who that is. But the divine, the Master Diviner, right? She's the pink-haired lady in the Liufu.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't remember her real name. Does she do a divine dance for peace? Not yet.
Not yet.
She'll do the Macarena.
Fushuan.
But yeah, it does make me think of She Whom Shall Not Be Named as well.
And who's that?
I don't know. She Who Shall Not Be Remembered.
Except for getting a lot of screen time in the main story quest.
I don't remember who you're talking about at all.
No, that's okay. That's okay. You know, maybe you're trapped in a samsara. Yeah.
As long as it's not in her head again.
I just wanted to quickly, you touched on how she likes to go diving like Fremenae, and they have some interesting parallels of, you know, Fremenae, we've talked about having intense social phobia, and Kokomi is like, she doesn't necessarily bring to mind social phobia, but she does very much embody sort of the introvert aspect of a personality. Mm-hmm. She like has all of like the hardcore signs of an introvert, meaning that she literally loses energy, like has her energy drained if she's around people for too long and has to recharge by being by herself. I mean, that is what introversion is. And they really do a good job of sort of spelling that out to everyone and making that a big part of her personality. Even though she became this leader at a very young age, she never actually wanted that. Even though she had been reading military treatises from all over to that since she was a little kid and loves reading them, she never wanted to actually be the leader. She always just wanted to be an advisor. So she's very much a reluctant leader archetype, and she's very much an introverted personality archetype. They talk about her, how she prefers to be alone, how her hands shake every time she gives a speech because she gets so nervous. She enjoys going for walks in the forest or staring at the sea. And even Goro knows this about her so much because he works so closely with her that he has a line about how he tries not to disturb her unless there's like a very pressing military matter. So he kind of stays out of her way and doesn't involve her in anything that she doesn't have to be involved in. So mm-hmm. I just thought that was fun because there are certain characters in this game, like Fremenae, that are sort of coded to really showcase a certain aspect of a common personality type. And I think she's definitely one of them, sort of repping introversion compared to a lot of the other characters.
Oh, absolutely. And also, like, look at Goro being such a good friend. Like, it's like, I'm really not going to bother her unless I absolutely have to.
Yeah, I like that he's insightful in that way with her.
Which brings me to a very important question, I think, too. There aren't many Kokomi ships. I know of one, which is Goro Kokomi, which we've talked a little bit about before because we talked about like the Ito ships, and Goro's also shipped to Ito. But does anyone have an opinion on Kokomi ships or on Goro Kokomi?
I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
Yeah. And
maybe it's because I feel like, one, I really do enjoy Goro and Ito together, but I think it's also he worships her, and it feels not gross, but like if she were to act on anything like that, it would feel kind of like she's taking advantage of him in a way, if that makes sense. And I don't like the thinking of that. However, another like very obscure ship I do like with Kokomi is Kokomi in Ayaka.
Oh, I haven't heard about that one.
I've seen very few like fan arts of it, like maybe two, and they've always been like delightful.
Femme on femme action.
Yeah.
They'd be so delicate together.
So delicate. But it's very much of like they both have a similar upbringing to the point that they have a lot of pressure put on them, and they have a lot riding on the stakes of like their performance as, you know, as leaders. To me, I like that more, but that's the only other ship like I've been able to see that actually seems like good to me. But what do y'all think?
I ship her with Kujo Sara.
Ooh. Oh, I haven't seen that one either. Why?
They both like lead armies. They were sort of enemies. Like it could be like a hot like enemies turn lovers kind of thing. Like there's always that sort of underlying tension between them, but they're kind of evenly matched as well. And their personalities are so different. So yeah, I could see it.
Interesting. Okay. Tiff, thoughts?
I got no ships for her.
You're like, especially not Goru.
Especially not Goru. Yeah, I'm not a Goru fan. I just not.
So I like Goru Kokomi. I don't see him necessarily as worshipping her in the same way as you do, Al, though I understand why you feel that way. I think it's very valid. I kind of see them as like partners in crime right now, where like Kokomi sees them as more equals in the moment. I feel like she would trust Goru to do whatever he needed to do, where Goru might be like, no, but I'm gonna listen to you, bitch. Like, I like the idea that he understands her and knows her more than anyone else, and I think that's really cute too. But I do think I like both of them single right now, because they just got out of a war, and I don't know, I feel like you have to process all that before you get into a relationship.
She needs some sleep. That's gonna be her shit.
He needs to stop, like, getting near Yaimiko and people like her.
That just the potion thing made me think of it. Like, he was not happy talking to Lisa. He was like, uh-oh.
He was having flashbacks. He was like, the war wasn't bad. Dealing with Yaimiko was bad.
That was so funny. He's like, it's almost like you're a 4-star Yaimiko or something.
It was funny that he actually said that too.
He had flashbacks, and then like Traveler gave like Lisa some dumb title, like something sage, and he was like, is that the equal of a Guji here?
Oh yeah.
There's one thing that I'd like to just bring up that's not necessarily Watasumi Island specific, but as we're recording this, the new Mondstadt type wishing banner has come out, and I would like to give a congrats to our fiends who, in case you didn't know, likes albedo and now has a C6 albedo.
It was
so golf clap.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'd like to thank the Alchemy Commission for all of their support.
Lisa was working overtime on that one.
Sucrose's tireless behind the scenes work.
No, fuck Sucrose. Listen, ooh. I was so mad that Albedo did not pop up once in the potion event. Like, they kept talking about him and they were like, he's so impressed with your test results. And I was like, then come out and say it to me. Where are you?
Odd. Yeah, that was odd.
I mean, it was also odd that they couldn't get Razor to just show up too after they talked about him.
Lisa was like, my son is in the woods, I can't disturb him. Like,
Albedo's out there throwing a ball over to him. They're having some like, catch.
The budget only allows for this many voice actors to be in this event.
I'm like, you picked the wrong ones. Like, I don't get it. I mean, I liked all of the appearances, obviously, but I joked that I had to bring my own Albedo to the Alchemy event on Twitter. And one of the hosts of Resonance, which is another Genshin Impact podcast, said it was BYOB, bring your own Beto. It really got me. But yeah, I have C6 Albedo now. And my final 10 pull that gave me my sixth Albedo was him, Kaya, and Sucrose. And it felt too real. I was like, Kai Beto and Sucrose is trying to third wheel. Got it. But on that note, I do think that's all the time we have today on Watasumi Island. Thank you, travelers, for taking the trek out to the western coasts of Inazuma with us today. If you liked this episode or you didn't like this episode and you want to let us know what you think, you can email us at talesofdevoutpod@gmail.com. Additionally, you can follow us or DM us, or both, on Instagram, Tales of Devout Pod, or Twitter, Tales of Tevat. Additionally, feel free to review us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. Next week, we're going to be continuing, and I really mean continuing, because this is like the third part of our series, talking about the desert of Sumeru.
Put on your sunscreen. We're going back.
Bring your water. Don't bring your tignaris.
The trilogy concludes.
Bring your aloe vera, because you're going to get burned.
Next week, we're going to be talking about the remnants of Korriban. So make sure to come on in, leave your tignaris at home. Bring your sunblock and your water, because it's going to be a dry one. Until then, travelers, safe journeys. We'll see you next time.
Bye, strategy nerds.
Not me.
And marine biologists.
Not the marine biologists.
And what's the snake one? Herbivore.